morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our Sunrise Project call this morning in this incredibly compassionate and warm and loving space filled with our desire, our mutual desire to heal, starting with ourselves and our families and our children. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And ooh, that means a lot to me this morning. Actually, we were having a conversation this morning with our guest already, and I might share a little bit later. Speaking of our guest today is Dr. Bernada Baker. She is calling in from Los Angeles, California, super early out there, and I'm so appreciative. Dr. Baker is a community psychologist, motivational and keynote speaker, DEI champion, pastoral counselor, educator, and author. Ooh, she is an incredible visionary, and her life purpose is to empower individuals to break down barriers and build bridges rather than walls, maximize their potential, execute goals with purposeful intention, and to excel by any means necessary. I love that. She is a respected spiritual leader who has served as a chaplain at Emory Hospital and Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. Our guest specializes in fostering community, curating confidence, powering personal development, and dealing with childhood trauma and grief. She was raised by her grandmother, who was a sharecropper in Mississippi, who stressed the value of a college education. Growing up in a chaotic family environment made our guest a natural overachiever, and she has earned a BS in community health, a Master of Divinity, Master of Public Health, MBA in healthcare administration, and a PhD in community psychology. It's so amazing. And I'm like, okay, I got my BA and happy about that. She has served as a psychology and business administ I'm sorry, served as a psychology and business professor for 15 years with appointments as a visiting professor at Texas Southern University and the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. She is the author of four books and the founder of the Princess Within Academy, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that focuses on leadership development and mentoring girls in STEAM enrichment, character building, social and emotional wellness, and college and career readiness. She is the CEO of Empower to Excel Consulting, which is a boutique coaching, consulting, counseling, and counseling firm. And she, like I said earlier, is calling from Los Angeles, California, and is here this morning graciously to share and to discuss a really special topic called Sacred Grace: Strategies to Empowering Parents to Refuel Our Cups. And so thank you, Dr. Baker, for being here this morning. I'm so grateful to have you.
Thank you so much, Kelly, for having me here. It is definitely an honor and a privilege to share with you all on this morning.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you. And I was sharing how I feel peaceful with you. I've never met you until this morning. And the few minutes we were on before, I was like, oh, just this incredible peace came over me. And so even thinking about the topic, I'd love to have you share what you or how do you define sacred grace? What does that topic mean?
You know what, sacred grace, you don't hear it often, but it is definitely a term that I have coined for my own self because I understand as a high functioning woman, a professional woman, and overachieving mother, and all of the other things, all the many tasks that so many of us carry, the titles. Sacred grace can be defined as the practice of nurturing oneself with deep compassion, mindfulness, and balance, recognizing the sacredness of one's own well-being. And as you know, as a mom, it is so easy to become so caught up in everybody else's things, everybody else's stuff. And so oftentimes, as parents, as caregivers, all of the things, we neglect to give ourselves that space. And as you were sharing your story this morning with your son and being left leaving him standing on the corner of Howard University, and how you felt in that moment, you needed sacred grace. And he needed sacred grace as well. And so I celebrate you for taking the time that you needed to say, hey, it's gonna be okay. You'll be fine. I'm gonna get in the car and go where I need to go. That was the moment of sacred grace. And so
Ooh, I appreciate that. I'm all emotional hearing that. And it's so funny because, and for people that don't know the story, yesterday I went to Howard And yesterday I was dropping off my youngest, Christopher, for what should have been an easy drop off. And then I was heading to Cleveland to attend my uncle's 80th birthday party and had things mapped out, timed out, or so I thought. And we got there and someone had taken his room. Yes, another student took his room. Turns out they were both given the same room, but then the other young man had a different room. Bottom line is that he hadn't gotten the email about. So it was a situation. And my youngest, and I said, no, he needs to keep his room where we are. Having gone there, I knew the other buildings. I knew that he wasn't going to want to be in that other space. And he said, it's okay. I don't care. And I said, okay. And so I went with it. Thanks to Sunrise, I took a deep breath and said, okay, and didn't force or push. And we get over to the other dorm. Sure enough, he was deer in headlights. I was like, okay, no, I don't. I want my room at the other place. And in that moment, I had to make a choice because I was about to miss my second flight or decide not to come to Cleveland and just, help him work it out. And so I chose. And I also felt my energy changing and my frustration level rising because there were so many things that we could have avoided had he listened, but he didn't. And so in that moment, I made a choice to get in the Uber and go to the airport and come to Cleveland. But I left him standing on Sherman Avenue, right there near U Street. And I said, walk across. Dad's over there. He'll help you work it out. Walk back to the other dorm. And but I have had massive guilt as I was flying, because it was like the look on his face was like, you are abandoning me. But I was really choosing, I think I was choosing myself and my mom and my uncle and my other parts of my family that I wanted to also be with. So the sacred grace concept hit me really, and I appreciate that definition. But how do you think our children feel when we choose ourselves? How does that work?
That's a great question, Kelly. I think that our children, especially children who are incredibly privileged, my 7-year-old included, I think that they don't know what it looks like to for us as parents to choose ourselves. So that level of entitlement, we're always, we're their superheroes and we've become accustomed to being their superheroes. And so we have to deal with the, what we've set up, what we've established for them, if you will. And so I think there are hard lessons that they have to learn. And the world that we live in, it's a place of full of hard knock lessons. And so they might not always feel good. But I think that when you have been immersed with privilege and when you've been immersed with, just like Dee said about her son, he's used to having this type of lifestyle and all of the things. I just don't think they're tapped in or that they have a clue about what life looks like on the other side. So their level of expectation for what that looks like, of course, they probably feel like you're the worst parent ever when you choose yourself.
Right.
And
In that moment.
they disqualify everything else that you've done for them in that moment. But they you learn as you grow. So
That's right. You learn to. I love that because I think so many of us have done that to our children, created children that have this learned helplessness in some ways because of so much privilege. And at some point, it's like, okay, I've taught you as best I can. I need to let you figure it out. But then there's a way to continue the checking in and all that good stuff. So why is it such a challenge for us as caregivers to apply that same attention and that love to ourselves? Because we pour into our children oftentimes their entire lives until they go off on their own. So why is that?
Well, I don't know about you, Kelly, but I wasn't raised in a household where being selfish was promoted. I wasn't raised in a household where I was taught that it was okay for me to tend to myself before tending to everybody else or being a people's pleaser or meeting the expectations and, doing what everybody else wanted me to do. And so just a follow-up to sacred grace. I also like to define it as finding stillness in the midst of chaos because we live in a chaotic world. And if we can all be honest, we all have a million, broken little pieces in life that we're trying to assemble back together. And so allowing yourself the space for self-renewal and living with intention and authenticity, in order to really tap into your sacred grace, you have to be willing to be authentic about where you are and the challenges in life that you are currently growing through. And so I believe that is the challenges for parents to apply the same attention to detail to themselves as we apply to everybody else. Number one, I believe their cultural expectations. As a Black woman, I saw my grandmother, who was a sharecropper, who did everything. She left her husband after 36 years. She was determined to make it by any means necessary. So this was a woman who I placed on a pedestal. I never saw her cry. I never saw her throw in a towel or was ready to give up or any of those things. And so I think that for many of us, we've inherited that superwoman cape, and I don't necessarily know that that's a good thing, because for many of us, it has forced us to mask the realities that we're living in. And oftentimes, the expectations that other people have for us, they're too high. Like, I don't want that level of expectation. I don't want that level of responsibility. But I think culturally, we have conformed to those expectations. And then I think also the guilt and the self-sacrifice. Somewhere along the line, we've been taught that we are the martyrs and we have to do and to be more like Jesus and all of the things. And I just no longer subscribe to that. I it is my due diligence, my duty, my responsibility for me to take care of myself before I take care of everybody else. And so, and as much as I love my daughter with my whole heart, she is indeed the project manager of my life. Someday she thinks she's my mama.
And
I
she
am,
said,
as she said, I am clear that if we're on the plane and the plane goes down or emergency takes place, that I have to put on my oxygen mask first. And I think that we have to continue. We hear those instructions every time that we get on the airplane. But I think that that's a simple truth that we have to apply every second of the day, every moment of the day. And I'm going back to where you were or at Howard. Like, you needed to do what was in your best interest in that moment, because up until this point, you have prepared your son to get to where it is that he needs to go and to be fully equipped with what it is that he needs in order to best navigate that salute, that problem. And so.
yes, it's so interesting and so divine that you're here this morning because I didn't expect to even share that story. And then it came out, but it's all divine, I think. I want to go back to your grandmother who raised you and how you talked about she was this sharecropper and left after 36 years of marriage. Like, how did she, or did you ever talk about that? Like, how did she get to that point? And did you ever come back and have a conversation with her about it?
Listen, again, I came from an all-Black family where you don't even talk about the dysfunction that's taking place, right? You're just somehow in the middle of it. You see
Right.
it
No one
happening,
talks about
but you
anything.
just ignore the writing on the wall or the elephant in the room. And so, coming from a family where my mother became addicted to drugs when I was 7 years old, and just kind of watching her journey spiral out of control from there. And thank God for my grandmother, both of them actually. But no, we never talked about, I knew that my grandmother was leaving my grandfather because he was cheating. I knew the challenges. I knew that she dropped out of eighth grade when she was in Mississippi because she had to pick cotton and all of the things. And so the strength that I have today, I inherited this strength, right? It was passed down to me. It's not something that I went looking for. And so, no, we didn't talk about it. And so now in my household, as a parent, my daughter and I are talking about everything. I'm letting her see me cry. I'm like, Bella, I am on the verge. Mommy, I need a moment. I don't have the capacity to answer those questions right now. Give me a second. And I think that we have to do better than what we were taught, what was modeled for us. And for many of us who were first generation college students, I know I was. I was that overachiever, so I was determined to defeat the odds and to do everything that everybody thought that I could not do based upon the circumstances that I was born into. And so in that, even in, with the expectations, the guilt, the self-sacrifice, and the drive, the ambition to be something that I had never seen before, somewhere along that line, I still had to find the sacred grace so that I could become the woman that God had predestined for me to be, and not the model figure that everybody else wanted me to be. And that's not always easy, especially when you're in the spotlight, when you are leading the path, when you're the trailblazer, when people are depending on you. And it's not easy. And so I think, again, removing the mask and honoring your authentic truth is sometimes not easy for many of us who have carried titles. But when you strip away the titles and you strip away all the possessions and all of the things. When you get to the core of who you are and how you're feeling, all of our tears are the same. The blood is the same. You know, the blood that we bleed when somebody has cut us, or when our hearts are broken, or when we are again trying to find that peace, PEACE, from the broken pieces, PIECES, in an effort to establish that sacred grace. We're all the same.
That what you just said is so powerful, finding the peace from the broken pieces. That is so powerful. When did you do that? Like, 'cause you have all these degrees and all of these leadership titles and all the books and all of that. Did you recently get to the sacred grace space? Or 'cause I
You
look
know,
at your bio and it's so incredible. And yet it feels like, were you doing the same thing most of us on this call were doing?
I was. I believe that when I went away to college, my grandmother finally got me away to college, and she was like, "You're gonna be somebody." And so it was my first year of college that I was like, "Look, you can just call me Dr. Baker because I'm gonna be Dr. Baker." And so going away to college was my escape from the chaos. So it was then that the light bulb came on, that like, look, this is the opportunity for you to have the space to create the life that you desire to live. And so, as a psychologist, as a pastoral counselor, as a ministerial leader, I started counseling when I was like 23, and I started it based upon, you know, I think I was engaged at the time, and started just doing premarital counseling. And as that opened up and the engagement fell by the wayside, you know, we began to unravel all of my issues surrounding my mother and our relationship and the brokenness, and how I started the Princess Within Academy based upon me being a broken little girl who didn't grow up with her mother. And I didn't even know that. Like, I just was like, hey, let me mentor these girls because I need to equip them with the tools that I didn't have as a young Black girl growing up on the South Side of Chicago. And so one by one, the pieces began to come together. And it just kind of happened. And so I am one who believes in you have to practice what you preach. And as a went seminary, I couldn't study to be a pastoral counselor without having a pastoral counselor. So myself, you know, I stayed. I started when I was 24, and now I'm 44. So here we are 20 years later, and I'm still in that space, that healing space, that growing space, that learning space, the space where you are evolving. And so I've been on the journey for quite some while.
That's amazing. I think that's so powerful. And 24 years old, I was a whole different person at 24. And I think so many of us, especially I know because people on this call have shared their stories and some have shared their journeys and some are here listening every week, and that's fine too. You know, many of us, it takes a lot longer. You know, I'm in my late 50s, and it took me until last year to finally choose myself. And that's so deep. So I, you know, what are your words of wisdom to people that are maybe still transitioning to that space to choose themselves?
You know, I think again, Kelly, with following with societal expectations, that you go to college, you get married, you have the children, you know, chase after your career, you have the white picket fence, you join your soror, you know, you're join your you're active in your sorority, you're Jack and Jill, you're all of the things. So we are decorated with all of the medals, right? But if you don't take the time to really tap into what's going on with you, I tell my clients all the time, what you don't confront will ultimately confront you. And so while we think we're masking and hiding and running away from our trauma, eventually it's going to catch up with you. And if you don't sit down and catch up with it, it's going to sit you down, and it'll catch up with you. And so many of the high profile women that I work with, you know, they find themselves crashing and burning because they have, you know, ran from their truths for so long, or they've masked it for so long in between the corporate careers, in between the limelight, in between all of those things. And so we've heard people talk about being public successes and private failures. And so when you are operating at the highest magnitude, where you are flourishing in your career and your home is in shambles, your heart is, you know, you're beautiful on the outside, but your heart is broken. You are, you know, have all the things. People have placed you on a pedestal and they admire you from afar. But what they don't know is the tears. What they're not aware about is the tears that you cry at night when nobody sees you, and the loneliness that you feel, or the days where you feel like you're ready to throw in the towel because you feel lonely in the midst of a whole bunch of people. And so it's never too late to tap in, but you have to be willing to do the work, and you have to be willing to create that sacred space in an effort to tap into your sacred grace.
Ooh, I am just, everything you just said speaks to me personally. And I think a lot of people on the call, because, but putting on the face or being a really successful, what did you say? You could be a public success and a private failure. Maybe it's not failure per se, but just really going through pain that no one sees, right? And so that is so powerful and so true. And I want to talk about how do you move past. As moms or as dads or as caregivers, how do you move past that guilt and the shame that sometimes we have with,
I think, Kelly, it's I think you have to make a concerted effort to release yourself from those shackles. And we can be honest as women, empaths, all of the things we feel, we're natural born nurturers. It is very easy to fall victim to being responsible and holding that guilt. When people are diagnosed with breast cancer and things like that, oftentimes and research has shared this, but oftentimes when you have unforgiveness in your heart, or things like that that is built up in your body, is dis-ease. And so oftentimes you just have to make a concerted effort that whatever has you in bondage or whatever is holding you down, whatever those shackles are, you have to be willing to release that. And so guilt can't hold you down if you make a concerted effort that guilt is not going to be the master of your life, right? Sometimes we have to be very honest about how we become addicted to our suffering or how we become addicted to playing the victim. You also have to be honest about the situations in which you have created. For many of us, most times, if you're a Christian or what have you, most times people are like, well, I'm waiting on God, or this situation, this is what I was led to do. 9 times out of 10, God's probably waiting on you. You're not waiting on God. And 9 times out of 10, the things that we dealt with, it was not because God forced us to deal with those things. It was only because we decided that that was the narrative to our story that we wanted to write. And so no matter where you are in your journey, no matter your age, all of the things, you can make the decision to wake up one morning and begin to write the best-selling novel with the most recent chapter of your life. And so again, you have to develop what that sacred grace looks like, but then you also have to be willing to do the work. You have to be willing to allow things to just spiral out of control, and where you're laying on the floor, crawled up in the corner like a baby in a baby pose, feeling like you're at your wits' end and you need help. So it's a cry out, but you have to be willing to be honest about that, those spaces. And for many of us, who wants to feel that? Nobody wants to feel that pain. It's
Many
much
people
easier
in the
to,
pain.
yeah, it's much easier to stay in the space with the pain that than it is to allow life to unravel and for you to come dead, confront your current situation dead on, and to unravel a new level of pain.
It is really hard, and it's hard to really just also just tell the truth, like really be it's like what happens if you just tell the truth about what's really going on? I think that simple question sounds so simple, but it's not simple to really tell the truth.
And as a psychologist, Kelly, I've learned that that question, how are you, is fully loaded. That's a fully loaded question, because when somebody asks you, how are you, do you really want to tell them how you are doing? Do you really want to hear how I am doing? And well, if we're honest with ourselves, you can't just continue to give the same response of, I'm fine, I'm well, I'm good, da 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 da. Because if you tap into the inner core of your heart, and you know what it is, how you really are doing, you can't wear that mask any longer.
That's right. You can't wear the mask. But then also, when you really tell yourself the truth, and I did this last year, over the last year, finally, it makes you start dealing with what's really going on and start feeling all those feelings, which is really hard, and then moving through it because it's moving through the pain that gets you to the other side. And you can't go around it. It's like you have to move through it, right? I think it's really interesting. And then also being able to hold our children accountable for their choices. Like yesterday, I don't care. Yes, you do care. And you're gonna care. And so I stepped up and said, no, he needs his room. He needs what was committed to him. He said, it's okay. I don't care. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna let you say that. And then I'm gonna follow your lead. And then, 30 minutes later, here we are. Your choice. But anyway, someone just wrote, and people are so taken aback when you tell them the truth of how you are.
Yeah, because when you've been so performative, how are they supposed to take it when you become so authentic? How are they supposed to take it when you become transparent if you have not created this space for people to accept you at your highest level of your truth? Kelly, I'm reminded again, I'm so grateful that this conversation is centered around your son, but I'm reminded that in that moment, you had to choose to let go. You had to choose to let go of the guilt. So the story that you continue to tell yourself about how guilty you feel and this, that, and the other, you have made a decision that that's how you feel because you don't have to feel that way. That's a decision. That is the one decision. And many of us struggle with the undiagnosed pathology of acting like everything is all right when life is really in shambles.
Wait, say that again. Struggle with the undiagnosed. Say it again, please.
We struggle with the undiagnosed pathology of acting like everything is all right when life is really in shambles.
Okay.
Go ahead.
That should be a title of a book, but go ahead, please.
And we've become so overwhelmed by the metrics and the expectations of being performative and accumulating accolades that we often neglect to give care to the needs of our own hearts and souls first. Now, I'm not in the chat, but if anybody can identify with this, just say ouch. But I'm most confident that this is a story that all of this very relatable to so many of us. And even if it's not our story, I'm sure that we probably saw our mothers and our grandmothers or our aunts or whomever lead these lives. And so,
Lots of ouches. I think it's that addicted to the pathology. I'm going to write that down. That's everything is perfect, something to that effect. It's yeah, lots of people said ouch. It's true. It's true. And addicted to the things, is just moved and got, gave everything away in this house that I've had and held dear, pretty much everything. And it's just things. It's like things. And don't need things. I need my heart to be good.
And your soul to be at peace, whatever that peace looks like for you. But again, when we've camouflaged our peace, when we've camouflaged things for so long, it's a new journey for us. I've had clients who were, 35 years into marriage and were like, look, this is not my grandmother. And was like, look, I'm walking away. Let's do this work. And I'm like, okay, let's jump into it. And they're like, Dr. Baker, this hurts. This is terrible. I'm like, but you were in this marriage for 35 years. Did you really think once you pulled the Band-Aid off that the healing was going to take place in the first year? No, you're probably going to have to go to some through some very intensive, painful spaces before you get to the place where, because it's a broken place. I mean, and when you have any kind of surgery, the recovery process is pretty intense. And so I think, again, affording ourselves the sacred grace to be present with the healing process, and it's never too late. And so you're not behind. You are exactly where you need to be in this season of your life, doing exactly what you need to do. And I believe that it is important for us to constantly remind ourselves that it's okay. I'm safe. I've made the best decision for myself. I'm honoring my sacred grace. And everything is going to be all right.
And everything. That's true. I love that. I remember in 1996, maybe, I went to a book signing by Susan Taylor when she did the book In the Spirit, and I remember so distinctly her saying, "You have to give yourself to yourself before you give
I
yourself
love
away."
that.
And I wrote it down. I quit my job at P&G, like much the next day, because I wasn't doing that. But then that was 1996. It took another 30 plus years to do it again, but in that meantime, it was giving myself to everybody else. all the time. It's finally a transition, but it's challenging.
It is. And then you have to think about also, I have a lot of clients who, stay in marriages until their children turn 18 because they
Yes.
think that's what's the best thing, that's the best thing to do. But you really have to think about whether or not what lessons are you teaching your children? Like, you're teaching your children to stay in circumstances that are not necessarily healthy for them. You're teaching your children to deny what they need, what their needs are. And so when they model that behavior at a later date, we have to take responsibility for the lessons that we modeled for them. I can recall my parents, my dad and my stepmom being divorced. I think I probably was in third grade. Honey, it was one of the best things that could have ever happened to our family, okay? Because although nobody on the outside knew that our house was filled with turmoil and chaos, as a child, I couldn't sleep at night. As a child, there was no peace. And so once that divorce was granted, there was a greater level of peace. And so I learned that at an early age. At the tender age of 8, I was graced with the task of coordinating an escape from my mother and her unhealthy drug selling boyfriend, right? At the age of 8. And so I tell people all the time, like, I really got additional 10 years on my life because I've been making executive life decisions since I was 8. And so at the early age, I knew I had a sense of understanding about what was healthy and what was not healthy. And I've made a commitment to myself and to life to make sure that I don't stay in circumstances or situations that don't feel good to my soul. And I think for women, I tell a lot of my clients, like, the more pairs of Louis Vuittons you got to buy, the more trips you got to take, the more, Louis Vuitton bags you need to add to your collection. Those are probably a total of the number of issues that you would much rather not deal with. And so rather than go shopping, schedule you a counseling appointment. Let's pull back the layers. Let's do the work of what you're masking. And so again.
Oh, and so many of us, what therapist calls it, trips, purses, and shoes. I used to be that person, trips, purses, and shoes person versus, and the transition is so much more healthy. And as you were talking, I was reminded of yesterday, you modeled the behavior of, it's okay, I'm just gonna stay here. I'll just do what they ask.
And your
That's what
son did
he
that. He did
did.
that.
And I was
He
looking like,
absolutely did
no,
that.
speak up for yourself and tell him you want the room you were given. And which was exactly what, anyway, he, but I watched and I, what, as you were just talking, I said, that's what he saw
A
for
mere
his
reflection. He
entire life,
definitely saw.
19 years. Just
A
suck
mere
it up,
reflection.
just stay and say, it's, and he literally shrugged his shoulders, it's okay. I was like, it's not
Where,
okay.
Telly, where did he learn that from?
Correct. All for his entire 19 years of his life. It's like, it's okay. We'll just suffer through it. And, but it wasn't necessarily the word suffer. We just gonna keep moving. Just keep moving. Don't talk about it. Just keep moving. And
And I
that's the
think that we want to be very mindful about the words that we speak, but it's in some of these situations we are suffering. In some of these situations, it's catastrophic. In some of these situations, so for me, and again, I don't have I was graced with the opportunity to become a parent at a later age, and so I had done most of the things. And I'd done most of my healing work. And so now with my daughter, Bella, like we're talking about these things. Bella, if it's not a healthy situation, you don't have to stay. I don't care who it is. I don't care what it is. I don't care who's attached to. You're not chasing after anybody or anything. And so those are some hard lessons that you learn as that she's learning as a 7-year-old.
as
But
seven.
it will benefit her later on down the line. And so I'm grateful for all of the heartache, for all of the turmoil, for all of the mishaps that I've experienced in life, because it truly has helped me on my own healing journey. And I tapped and tuned in, you can't, you really can't, you can't afford to walk around with the mask on because you know that you are the exemplary model for so many. And
That's
so the
right.
model, I believe, comes, is far deeper than just the physical appearance. It's far deeper than just the natural beauty that people see when they look at you or what they admire about you from afar. I could care less about the accolades and the spaces in life where people land. What I really want to know is how, what is the condition of your heart? How is your soul? How are you tending to you? What does those things look like? And I think that in the surface society that we live in and that we have, become ingrained in, we've learned how to operate on a very surface level. And so getting to the core of what's going on That's not, the tip of the traditional fashion for many of us.
No, it's like ripping off the band-aid. And most of us don't want to rip off the band-aid because it hurts for that moment. So, and then you get addicted to not ripping off the band-aid, because it's just easier to just leave it there. So I love that. I think, choosing ourselves is such an important thing. And I love the whole this notion of sacred grace. I think it's so powerful. It's so powerful. And I love how you've articulated it this morning. And so many people said, ouch, because we can relate to whatever our situations are. Most of us do exactly what you've talked about. And the beauty is getting to that other side, finally ripping off the band-aid.
And Kelly, this is to another point as it relates to parenting. Sometimes we have to be willing to acknowledge that as a result of our own inner infractions, we really don't have what our children need because we have not done the work that we need to do. And so oftentimes we think that we're pouring from a filled cup, a full cup, because we can provide the things, because it's all things, but the things that our children really need, we're not, a large majority of the world is not providing. And so let me say
That's
that
it. I'm
again.
sorry. Yes.
Let me say that again because it might resonate with somebody. Sometimes we have to be willing to acknowledge that as a result of our own infractions, we don't have what our children need because we have not done the work that we need to do. I
That's
can't
right.
pour into you from a level of transparency, vulnerability, authenticity if mommy hasn't done the work. If
That's
mommy
right.
hasn't confronted her own demons, if mommy hasn't acknowledged what her own challenges are at the fight of her life, if mommy refuses to acknowledge that she's in the fight and for the fight of her life, then I can't really fully help empower you. Now, I can walk around here and masquerade as if I'm doing my best, but and mo 9 times out of 10, we're not.
We're not. And I think, it's so ironic and divine that this happened yesterday, because by me walking away and getting in that car and getting on the plane, my son finally stood up for himself. He called his coach. His coach said, y'all need to work it out. You gave up the room. So go talk to, and he's on the swim team as well, this other young man who was in the room. And he said, y'all need to go work it out. And 2+ hours later, they worked it out, but he had to stand up for himself and say, no, I want the room that I was originally given, which was really hard because normally mommy would fix it. So that's
And
such a good lesson.
listen, your story about dropping your son off at Howard is the catalyst for this conversation. And we have to acknowledge that family patterns live on not just in behaviors, but they live on in patterns of thought. And so in the same, not just a behavior, but in your mind, how you've processed what it is that you've witnessed. Your son said, "I'm okay. I'll be fine. I'll just take it."
That's it.
Why? Why?
I'm just gonna take it and shrug the shoulders. It's okay.
It's
Like,
okay.
oh, it's not okay. But you're right. Why? Because that's what he's experienced his entire life.
And it's not a place of guilt. It's an aha moment more than
Yeah.
anything. It's like, oh, I did this. I'm responsible for this, which means that I got to go back to the table and really take a deep look in the mirror and identify the things that need to be healed within me, the things that money can't buy, the things that, association, the voids that association cannot feel, all of the things. Like, if you, and again, as an African American woman, if we were to have all of our earthly possessions stripped away from us, what do we have to show? Because many of us have survived and thrived off of the decorated careers and off of the decorated associations and all of those things. And so I believe that there are generations of generational trauma that has been passed down to us, especially as Black women. And for most of us, our parents' generations were, they were striving to just survive. And so when we got to the place where we could provide, we were striving just to provide. To provide, to be performative, all of the things. And so my prayer is that the generations behind us, that they will, and I think they're a little different. I don't know though, that's questionable. But my prayer, they definitely are more in tune with soul, mind, body, and spirit. And so my prayer is that they would be more inclined to really deal with their stuff. And I think that we're at a space and age in life where people are talking about therapy. We're talking about breaking down the barriers and the dysfunctions and the pathologies that no longer work for us.
I love that. I could talk to you all day, but I want to make sure that we open it up for people who may want to ask a question or have a thought or maybe are dealing with something this morning that they'd love to get your perspective on. So if you're on your phone, you can hit star six to come off of mute. Or if you're on Zoom, you can click the unmute button if you have a question for Dr. Bernada this morning, or a thought or a comment, or not. That's fine too. But yes, Dee.
Hi, Dee.
Hi. So yesterday I sat down and watched Nikki Giovanni's Moving to Mars or Going to Mars. I don't know if you've seen that that documentary that she had out. And she is definitely one unapologetic woman and mom. And one thing that she said in that documentary was that she was a single mother raising her son. And she said he's unhappy. They had a very strained relationship. But she said that her quote was, I educated him, I vaccinated him, and even gave him a few swim lessons. That is love. And that really, 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 I mean, that really hit home because what our children think is love isn't necessarily the only way. And I never thought about that. Those basic things that we do, make sure that they go to school for 12 years, get everything that they need. And when she said vaccination, I said, you know, that is love because we're protecting them from, you know, other external things. Like we do these things because that's what I mean, we just do them without that intention of knowing that that's love. So your point of saying, if we had no money, what can we say that we did out of love for our kids? And I would have never even thought of that. But yes, they were vaccinated, they were educated, they had extracurricular activities, they had, you know, they had all these things. And so that whole documentary was so, so, so powerful. And she had so many of those nuggets throughout it, but that particular one really hit home.
I
So
love that.
yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Dee, for sharing that. I can't wait to go watch it. I have not seen it yet. But the other thing that I want to share also, because most of us are women and mothers, you have to understand also that there's another parent that plays a critical role in the process of how your children are evolving. And so even when you're doing your work as a mother, children will still harbor their own feelings and perspectives regarding the dynamics of that other parent. And so the work does not solely lie on the mother. I was watching Daughters yesterday, and it was the net the net, it's on Netflix. And my dissertation for my PhD was the impact of father involvement on girls and women's self-esteem and their ability to sustain healthy relationships. So to see this title called Daughters, this was all in my business. But there was one young lady in particular. She looked like she was about 12 or 13. She was so angry with her father during that documentary that even when he came home, when he was in prison, she was like, "When are you getting out?" Then when he got out, "Did you find a job?" And so she was carrying all of the weight. And I was like, I wonder what the dynamics with her mother is like. But when you think about the fact that broken little girls grow up to be broken women, if we don't address those deeply rooted issues, I can see that little girl going on to get into a relationship with a male and taking out all of her anger and her frustrations out on that man. And then what happens when she has babies? Children, she passes that down to those children. And so it just continues to recycle itself, the dysfunctions, the generational traumas, the pathologies. And sometimes we have to understand that the holes and heartaches that many of us carry, that they will not be healed until we make a conscious decision to do our work. And oftentimes we want to do our work and we don't want to pull our children alongside us to do the work as well. When you sign up for your therapy appointment, trust and believe your child needs their therapy appointment as well, because 9 times out of 10, sometimes your best wasn't good enough. And so what you think is your best might not necessarily, and I take that back to what Dee was saying. You have to know what your children's love language is. Bella's to the point where she's like, "Mom, I had a bad day. Can you make me an appointment with my therapist?" She's 7.
Wow.
Like, what in the world does she know? But she's listened to her mom talk enough about trauma and childhood trauma, where she's like, that's childhood trauma, mom.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's so she's a special and very wise little soul, just like her
Is.
mom.
Thank you.
Really incredible. What if your children won't go to therapy?
You
My
know,
eldest refuses,
and
just says.
I think that's fair, because we make decisions. I think that, again, those are some of those hard lessons in life that, we see our children running head on into oncoming traffic, and they don't want to listen. And so all you can do is, extend the offer for them to do what you believe is best. But sometimes, again, we've all had to learn some hard lessons, some really, really hard lessons. And so if they
Yeah.
refuse, hope prayerfully, eventually they'll make a decision that this is what they need. And if not, you'll sit back and watch life probably spiral out of control, because there were some things that could have been addressed that did not necessarily have to result in the way that it will eventually turn out. And we all see, you see it oncoming traffic before it happens.
You see it.
You see it, the train about to derail.
That's so, everything you've said this morning has resonated with me. It's so deep on so many levels, and I didn't expect that. So, just so powerful. I appreciate you. Any other questions or comments? I love that comment from Dee about the movie. I want to see it as well.
So,
Does anyone else have a comment or question or thought this morning?
I did want to share, as I was listening, it reminded me of my family. We had a women's retreat, and we were there, and the younger generation, we were just having such a hard time as we were sharing, and we were crying and talking about our experiences. And we kept saying how, we didn't understand how we were, in our eyes, failing and having such a hard time, when our aunties and mothers, were just, they made it look easy, and they didn't deal with the same things that we did. And then suddenly they started sharing, oh, I experienced that and I can relate to that. And we were just like, why didn't you say anything? Because we put so much pressure on ourselves, because they made it seem like they were fine and they were getting by, and we didn't see the tears and we didn't see the struggle, even though it was there. And you mentioned about, how your grandmother, you didn't know how she got through it. And I did make the decision that I'm not gonna hide so much, and that it's, because we think we're protecting our kids from not seeing that, but whether they see it or not, they're going to struggle with something. And so I think it's,
No, it's
I
a
love
baby.
hearing that, but that definitely resonated with me, thinking about how we went through that, and all of us, like, it's like we all had the same thought, and we were all hesitant to share it because we all thought it's only me and everybody else is just fine. So just being able to say it, and I know we're oftentimes conditioned, don't talk about it, keep it secret. We're trained to keep it secret, but my mantra now is that secrecy keeps people in bad situations.
It does.
When you feel that need to hide, that's probably when you should open up to somebody. But yeah, just that, all of this definitely hit home for me.
Thank you so much for sharing that point. I have a note I wanted to share about that directly. And my note says, the way the personal lie operates in your consciousness is that it becomes the lie about yourself that gets projected onto people and into the environment. And so, not your personal truth, your personal lie. And so your personal lie is equally as strong, if not stronger, than your personal truth. And so we have to be mindful about what it is that we're projecting into the atmosphere, because oftentimes what we're projecting is not necessarily our truth. Kelly, was that good to you? Because you're looking like it was.
Feel my outright moving, my mouth full open, all of that. Yes. Because that's the thing. We lie to ourselves all the time. Not, and not and so when we finally tell, I say it again, your personal lie is
The way
often.
the personal lie operates in your consciousness is that it becomes the lie about yourself that gets projected onto other people and into the environment. So, because this is the story that you've told yourself, it has resonated with your consciousness, and it has become what you projected into every environment that you enter into. So the lie that you've convinced yourself is your truth. Every space that you step into, every time your face pops up on the screen or you mount the platform or you're on, you know, wherever you are in life, that's what you're projecting out to others because you are not operating at the optimum level of your authentic self.
Yes, that speaks to me volumes.
And when the lie is projected, we see in others exactly what we resist, what we avoid, or what we deny about ourselves. And for many of us, we've held on so tightly to those stories. We might not want to call it a lie, but whatever you have, you want to, your narration of your life, whatever feels good for you. You have to sit with that at night. That has to resonate deep down in your soul, and your personal lie circulates through your entire being, your entire universe, your entire existence, and it determines how you move or if you can move at all. And for many of us, we become stagnated. We become paralyzed with where we've been because of where we are as a result of the story that we've told ourselves.
Right. And so how do you break that storytelling habit?
You know, it's a day by day. It's not a, I don't have a one size, you know, fit all formula. But it's a conscious decision that you make that you are ready to do something different. That the lie you know when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. Was it R. Kelly? Somebody said when a woman's fed up. You know when you fed up and you never had enough and you've been fed up for quite some while, but it's not until you are fed up and you make a decision that you can no longer live in this state of being in which you've been existing. Because if you can really be honest, you've really only been existing, you haven't really been living.
That part.
And so while you're
God gives you a signal or a sign or like hits you over the head.
And so all of this time, you know, as you've been going through around and around the mulberry bush, once the light bulb comes on and you're like, I can't do this anymore, whatever your it is, I can't do this anymore, I don't want to do this anymore, it is then and only then that life will become better for you because you will make a conscious decision to make the executive decision to implement the necessary steps in an effort to get to start the healing process.
Yes, making a conscious decision to make an executive decision to start healing. It's a choice. It's like a power of choosing.
And Kelly, imagine for those of us who have had massive success, myself included, imagine what would happen if we started to show up in our personal lives like we show up in our professional lives. Make it make sense. Like
that part.
I mean, because we know that you're capable. We've seen how you move in other spaces. We know that you are clear. You are the woman for the job. So in honor of your own sacred space, you are the woman for the job to implement sacred space for yourself unapologetically.
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 I love that. I love that on every level. There's a question in the chat, and this might have to be our last one because we're almost out of time. But it says, broken children equals broken adults is a quote that they put in because of something you said, which is so powerful. These adults run families, companies, organizations, teams. Question, how do we help all recognize this when they show up to lead?
That's what you know who the broken adults are in those spaces, right? Because they are they're overcompensating for not having a voice at home, right? So they're coming into those leadership roles and they're taking it all out on everybody that they are leading. And so I believe that you have to be mindful about who you're dealing with, know your audience, and pick and choose your battles. Some people will leave this earth the same as they currently are. And so you have to identify the people who are really ready to take an introspective look at self. And as you focus on your own healing, you won't even be comfortable anymore in spaces where people are operating like that because it will be a trigger for you because it will remind you of all that you've already dealt with. So my advice would be to not so much focus on helping those who may not want to change, but working on the changes that you need to make internally so that when something triggers you, you can't even be present in those spaces.
Right. And then we work on our response.
We work on our
versus
response.
The other person. I love that. Because it's
so
all
you take
about
it, you shift it. You take the emphasis off of them and you place it on yourself.
That's it. Oh, I love that. Thank you for that answer. There is a link in the chat to the movie, I believe it looks like. Do you put in there the film that you mentioned? How, if people want to work with you, do you take new, are you
I am
taking new
currently taking
clients?
new clients, and you can reach me at www.brenadabaker.com. So my first and last name.com. And
Amazing.
I'll
I
put the
put it in the
website in
chat,
the
brenadabaker.com.
link. Okay.
And you are amazing. You do virtual appointments, I take it.
I do virtual appointments and high functioning
See me
professional
smiling.
high functioning professional women has been my jam. Because I am a sacred space for women who otherwise don't have anywhere to go. Because
Oh.
so many, because so many are looking up to them. But I'm a chaplain. I feel like I am the secret keeper and the companion for so many who are traveling this journey and
Yeah.
struggling on the inside, that people don't know
Oh.
about.
There's so you have given so much this morning, so many nuggets, and this whole concept of sacred grace is so powerful. Some people have said we will definitely sign up. So Bernada, if you're on the phone, is spelled B-E-R and as in Nancy, A-D-A, Baker, Bernada Baker, dot com. And she is taking new clients, which is wonderful. It's hard to find people who get it. And you
And you,
so, go ahead, please.
Kelly, let me just say this. I think that as women, I have one girlfriend. Actually, she just called me now and she's in Maryland. She's been looking for a therapist for 2 years, right? And she still can't find one. I believe that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And so all of the excuses that we give ourselves about why we can't do what we need to do when we need to do it. And again, with therapy is like dating or looking for the perfect job, right? You have to date a few times before you find the person that's a perfect match for you. And so for those of you all who are seeking therapists or who have not had the best experiences with therapists, keep looking for that person until you get what it is that you need because you're the person in need. And so when we give up on what we need because of the excuses that we tell ourselves, if we only further delay or prolong our healing journey.
So amazing. Keep looking for what you need. Dr. Baker is available if you want more of her. You've been so incredible. So many people have said thank you, and this was awesome this morning. It really has been awesome. Thank you for getting up early and for being such a light this morning. I really appreciate it. And we will, Dr. Baker is going to close us out in our prayer this morning. So thank you. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. God, gracious God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the opportunity just to gather in your presence. We thank you for the opportunity to create sacred grace and sacred space for each and everyone who's on the line with us. God, I ask that you would just touch the hearts and the lives of these your daughters. I pray, dear God, that you would just strengthen them. I pray. That you would go before them and make easy and successful their way. I pray that whatever challenges or struggles or obstacles that they are facing, I pray that you would give them a divine revelation, that you would give them the strategies that they need in order to best execute the plan for the next chapter of their lives. I pray, oh God, that you will replenish, that you will restore, that you will refuel them like never before. I thank you in advance that Kelly will get out of, she will make her flight and that there will be no delays, no hindrances. And I thank you for the mission, her life's mission, and the work that you called her to do. I pray, dear God, that even in this season, that you will continue to have your way in her life, that you will continue to heal her, make her whole. I pray that you would just pour back into her all that she's poured out so graciously to so many others. And I pray that you would bless her children, bless all of the children who are represented on this line. And we thank you for an amazing school year. And we thank you for an amazing day. And this is my prayer in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you for that. I received this morning. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Such a blessing. I will be reaching out as well and really appreciate you. Thank you. Have a beautiful day, everyone.
You're the same. Safe travels. Take care.
Thank you so much. Be in
Bye-bye.
touch. Take care, everybody.